Hey, everybody. My name is Joe Flush. Joining me, as always, is Ryan. Ryan, how are you tonight?
Joe, I am doing fantastic. I just watched my Chiefs win a playoff game for the first time in 20 years, so I'm riding high. How are you?
I knew that was going to come up somehow.
Right at the beginning.
I am just fine. So for anyone who's joining us for the first time and isn't aware yet, this is a podcast dedicated to miniature gaming, specifically Kings of War from Mantic Games and Wild West Exodus from Outlaw Miniatures. And we here discuss our hobby and our games and talk about them, so hopefully you guys get enjoyment out of that. And we're going to kick off with just what we've been up to recently. So Ryan, how about you start, other than watching playoff games?
Yeah, I haven't done much painting, but I've done quite a bit of assembly. There with the holidays, I had some spare time. So I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but I got 10 of the Brock Riders assembled. And then I've done 20 Iron Watch Riflemen, 20 Shield Breakers, and then I have about 10 of the Avatars of War Berserker to use as the Kings of War Berserkers. They are awesome models. They match up size-wise pretty well, but their heads are much smaller. So it is going to definitely be a noticeable difference, but just based on quality alone, I think they'll be well worth it just for a little bit of difference for what they bring to the table.
So the Berserker heads are too small?
Yeah, they are tiny compared to the Kings of War heads.
Even with like the giant Mohawks?
I mean, the Mohawks help, but it's still noticeable. I mean, I don't know. I'll show them to you at some point, but it is a very big difference.
Right on. I've never actually seen the Avatar War Slayers other than the one or two medals that I have from them. I've never seen the plastic kit, so that'll be interesting to see.
They're cool. Now, they are kind of a pain in the butt, though. They come in so many pieces. Like, it is, you know, there's the torso, the legs, each arm, each hand, and then the Mohawk is separate for all of them as well. The head and then the Mohawk. And then, so it's generally 8 pieces, but then even there's about 5 different ones that are holding a two-handed, like a big like great axe instead of like 2 weapons. And on that, like if you're holding an axe, the right hand is actually in 2 pieces. There's a piece that goes on the bottom of the shaft and on the top. So that one's 9 pieces. And so you got to try and get all this lined up while you're gluing it. But I'm still happy with them. They're great, but man, has it been a chore trying to get these guys together.
Fair enough. Well, you know, I'm not going to say I haven't been painting, because I have. And after our last show, you know, I figured out that to get my Adepticon armies done, I needed to paint and finish like 7 models a week. And that's pretty much out the window.
Not go make it?
No. And I really don't have anyone to blame but myself. You pointed this out, I think, a week after Christmas, and you're like, oh, I thought WoW was going to get you, and it did.
WoW as in World of Warcraft?
Yeah, World of Warcraft.
Oh, man.
It's far more entertaining playing with my son, because he's 13, and so we bought him an account for Christmas, and we've been playing it together, which is actually pretty entertaining now. So, yeah, I've been playing a lot more than that than I ought to have.
Did he ask you for this account, or did you just buy it for him?
No, we just kind of got it for him.
Yeah, so you were interested in playing, so you figure if you got your son playing, I see where you're going with this.
To be fair, he was playing first. Him and his friends started playing on like the free levels, which like level 1 to 20 is free. And I think he was at like level 15 or something. And I was like, hey, let's get him a WoW account for Christmas, and I'll turn mine back on and we can play together. And yeah, I mean, it took probably 2 or 3 weeks for it to really suck me back in, but it absolutely did.
There goes the hobby.
Yeah, it's suffering.
So besides WoW, what have you done? You gotta have done something, right?
Well, right. No, like I said, I was supposed to be painting 5-7 miles a week, and we figured that out back at like the beginning of December. And so since the beginning of December, I did finish my unit of Great Axe, my regiment. I finished my regiment of chariots. I did a Godspeaker. I finished my Crudger on a Gore, or Boar, whatever the hell. I guess they're called Gores in this system. So I have painted models. I just haven't done a lot of it recently, like in the last 2 weeks. I'm working on my horde of axes. Axe orcs right now, they're just hand, weapon, shield dudes. And that's, I mean, you know how it is, painting rank and file. It's rough.
Oh, yeah.
So, I have so many armies. Like, it's not going to kill me to not bring the Mantic army. I really wanted to finish it. And I should still be able to finish enough of it maybe to do the team tournament. But I'm most likely not going to get the 2,500 points done for the Clash.
That's fair. I mean, it was quite a bit to ask. I mean, 5 to 7 models per week can be quite a daunting task.
Yeah, I managed to hold up when I did the Great Axe for like 3 weeks. And then, yeah, as soon as I finished the Great Axe, it kind of pared down a little bit. And I've rewrote the list a couple of times, trying to see how many more models I can cut out of it. So, I mean, I could probably drop 25 models just by putting in like another giant. And instead of a regiment of Morax, putting in, I think I took that out and added like another Crudger. Maybe it was a standard bear on a gore. So, I mean, I could cut some models out, but even then, it's this horde, I think, is where it's going to really hold me up. And then I would still have to assemble, you know, another regiment of gore riders and then a horde of trolls and I think a horde of orklings as well. So I'm going to keep working, but at this point, I'm following the plan B. Like, I'm just going to end up taking my Kingdoms of Men if I can't get the orcs done.
Yeah, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to get the dwarfs done, so we'll see how it goes. I may try and finagle your dwarves out of you for that weekend, but right now it's looking like ogres.
Well, yeah, if you want them, they're certainly open for you to use. Just get those. All you really have to do is finish your Brock Riders, and you should be able to field a pretty solid army out of that that's all painted.
Yeah, and that should be doable.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, it's where it's at. I'm going to try still, but at this point I'm not pressuring myself.
Right.
It wouldn't be so bad to take my Kingdoms of Men, give them their first, you know, big swing in the Kings of War and see how it goes. I like the way they've been playing once I figured out kind of how to not get my pushed in every time.
Yeah, I mean, I think the learning curve is pretty good on Kings of War. I mean, it's a simple game, but it takes a lot to kind of learn the nuances on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to get used to it for sure, and it takes a little bit. So, talking about the Adepticon, though, we did get our first team practice game in, and given that we lack that fourth player, we ended up doing me versus you and Dave, because you guys are going to be a team, and I'm going to team with Chuck, who obviously lives hour and a half north of us, so he doesn't really get a chance to come down here as freely as we'd like. So you took ogres and abyssals, while I ran my Kingdoms of Men and dwarfs. Yeah.
Yeah. Dave and I didn't really talk. I mean, this was our first kind of go with it, so I just built 1,000 points. He built 1,000 points, and we just kind of met at the table, and, you know, we'll go from there. You know, this is what he wants to bring. This is what I want to bring. Let's try to compromise and make a decent list. So, not the most complimentary builds that we had, but
not at all.
It was a good start. I mean, we kind of each saw what we wanted to do, and we can certainly build on that.
Agreed. I of course wrote my lists together at the same time, so I gave them synergy. I really don't remember what all was in the list, but I know I had a Beast of War, a couple Regis of Knights, 2 Organ Guns, an Engineer, had a hero on a winged beast, or a Pegasus, I guess. Not the big one, but so it was Pegasus. And then I can't remember what all was in the dwarf piece of the army. I can't remember if I had a horde or a regiment of just iron, whatever the hell they're called.
It was, yeah, I think it was a horde of ironclad. You definitely had a regiment of berserkers, 2 organ guns, and that you had that little super fast ranger guy.
Oh, yeah, the captain. I took a ranger captain with the Wings of Honey Maze to try him out for funsies, just because I knew Dave tended to take at least 1 or 2 regiments of flame bearers, so I thought I'd give him a whirl. And you guys had, Dave, I know, had two of the Moloch hordes, unit of flame bearers. Did he have the big demon? He didn't have a big demon, did he?
He did not. He had two Ifrits.
That's what it was. He was going for the double fireball thing.
Yeah. And then I had like two units of siege breakers, a troop of chariots. That was kind of about it.
Did you have a unit of berserkers?
Yeah, I did. I had a unit of berserkers. And then just a warlord. I had a warlord on chariot that just run around as well.
Right. So, I mean, basically we lined up. I'm pretty sure that's where this game fell for you guys, was deployment. You guys ended up with your two Moloch hordes and your Siegebreaker horde right across from the two Organ guns, which were kind of entrenched in some woods. I had the Beast of War sitting next to it. I had a wizard in there, and you basically had to walk into the fire in line to get to me, because I sure as hell wasn't coming to you.
Right.
So, you know, you marched forward as you ought to do, and then turn one, I shot off the siege breakers. Turn two, you marched forward again, but still weren't, you know, you still hadn't gotten close enough to charge me. And so that turn, you were in my range, so I put all the shots into a Moloch horde and wavered it, and put the Beast of War and a regiment of knights into the other Moloch horde and broke it. And that really kind of spelled the game. The flying captain got across the board into the flame bearers, and he never killed them. Like, he was never going to kill them on his own. He just doesn't put out enough damage, especially with them having regenerate. But he did actually hold them up for like five of the six turns from shooting. Like, they've got a couple shots in there, but Dave even rolled bad enough that he never really killed him until the very end of the game, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that guy did his job. I mean, he tied up that unit the whole game. So, I mean, we did what we could, but your shooting was pretty good as well. Adding that Warsmith
next to
guns is a big deal. Rerolling those ones, I mean, my defense 6 doesn't mean anything when it's, you know, piercing 3. So it's, those siege breakers went down pretty quick.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome for me. I mean, in the end, yeah, I won. It was I think it was pillage. There were tokens around the board. At one point, your Braves came around on kind of the right side of the board. Well, my right side, I guess. And you ran into a unit of, I'm pretty sure it was the Iron Guard. And you failed to break them. Not by much either, if I remember. But you failing to break them left you just turned enough that I got my horde of ironclads into your rear, at which point the right side of the table disintegrated.
Yeah, that was just bad dice. And that's, you know, you got to expect at some point in the game you're going to have bad dice. Other than that, I can't complain. Everything was pretty good. But it was just a regiment of little guys that I tried to hit.
Yeah.
And just didn't do nearly as much damage as I should have. And so then they got stuck and then just got routed.
Yeah. And then the left side, I put my other unit of knights into your unit of chariots, and eventually you ground out the knights. And then I had my little human flying around on a Pegasus, just kind of being bothersome, not really doing anything special, just kind of, you know, floating around your backfield. And then he went and grabbed a token on the last turn. And so I think it was 3-2 on the token front, maybe 3-1, I don't remember.
That was being nice. I mean, if we'd have kept playing, it would have been a shutout.
But it was nice practice for me, for a list that I hadn't intended to take to the team tournament. But it definitely showed that you guys need to get together and work on the list, as opposed to just each bringing 1,000 points and seeing how it goes.
Agreed, and we will talk, but I don't know. It's just one of those things that we're not in a real hurry for right now. We'll figure it out. I mean, we're, at this point, neither of us are experts at Kings of War. We're just kind of going for the experience. You know, winning is even better, but, I mean, we're not going to stress out over it.
Right, no. Yeah, I get you. So, that was that. Let's flip a little bit in my notes here. There was an announcement quite recently from Mantic Games that they are going to release the Walking Dead miniatures game. And, like, by recently, I mean they announced this, what, 4 or 5 days before we're sitting down to record?
Yeah, week tops, you know.
So we haven't really seen much from it. Basically, what we've heard is that it's going to be a kind of Necromunda Mordheim-style game. Not Mantic's words, of course, ours. But it's basically going to be gangs fighting, and then the zombies are like a third neutral party in between. So I don't know how that's going to work. Where you have to run around each other, but avoid the zombies. I don't know what kind of mechanic they're going to use to like make the zombies come after people. It does sound really interesting, and it's cool. The biggest thing I have is it kind of worries me. I get that Mantic is growing, and they're really trying to reach out and broaden, and they're doing it very quickly. But considering like the trips that they've had on the most recent Kickstarters, you know, and I'm sure The Walking Dead is going to be done the same way. It's going to be Kickstarted. I have almost no doubt about that. So it just worries me that they're adding another iron to the fire, you know? It's,
yeah, I mean, it's like, I guess I should have mentioned, to go a bit off topic here real quick, but we'll circle back around, is I finally got my missing dwarves in December. Like, when I got the Kickstarter in September, it was missing 20 shield breakers. And so I followed procedures, you know, went through the little form, emailed them, said, hey, I'm missing these models. They should have been here. You know, can we get this squared away? And heard nothing. I mean, like, I had, like, no, we got your message. No, we're working on it. No, we're busy. Nothing. I heard nothing back from them. But you can see all over social media that they are swamped. You know, they're apologizing. People are saying, hey, we're busy. We'll get to these as quick as we can. So I give it a month. Still haven't heard anything. So I send a follow-up email. Nothing. Like, no one's even taken the time to acknowledge that I exist. So I still see on social media that they're still busy. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'll give them a little bit more time. They're, you know, obviously they had a little bit more demand than what they were expecting. And then, you know, the end of the second month comes, and I still haven't even heard anything from these guys. And so I send another email. Still nothing. So at this point, I'm getting pissed. You know, like, I'm thinking they're just trying to wait me out to screw me out of these 20 models. So 2 weeks go by, I start sending them an email every other day. And so after about a week, finally, I think it's Dave, you know, the guy Dave at ManicGames.com, emails me back and says, oh, I'm sorry about that. You know, well, we got those in the mail today. You'll have them here shortly. And, you know, shipping overseas takes a while. So about another week and a half or 2 weeks, I finally got them. But they're so busy that it took them over 3 months. The Kickstarter landed in September 7th. I got these models December 18th. Took them over 3 months to get me 20 models that I should have had in the first place, that they should have packaged correctly the first time around. So I get you're busy, but that's just poor customer service. So bring that all the way back around. Do they really need something of this magnitude added on to it? I mean, what is going to suffer? Something's going to have to suffer. They don't have enough staff to do what they want to do now. Now, I've heard that they are hiring more people, but if you can't keep up with the demand that you currently have now, and you're going to add a game that features Walking Dead, I mean, that show, comic, whatever aspect you want to look at is very popular right now.
Agreed. That's my worry. Because right now, like, if they trip and stumble on some Kings of War stuff or Dungeon Saga, you know, yes, we as gamers are like, ugh, what a pain in the butt. You know, it took us 2 or 3 months to get my stuff. But in the end, we're gamers. Like, we're that niche group who are, you know, fanatical about our hobby. And so in the end, yeah, we're pissed and we complain and we gripe, but we let it go. But right. If they do that and screw up The Walking Dead, now I'm not saying that, you know, the million people who watch The Walking Dead are all going to throw on this Kickstarter, but I bet a lot of people are. And I bet it's a real good opportunity to get people who have absolutely nothing to do with the miniature hobby. Like, it has a real open end to drag a lot of people into it. So if they screw it up, it's going to look really bad.
Yeah, no, I agree. Mantic really needs to get their ducks in a row and not screw this up. So what that tells me is that something else is going to suffer, you know, where we may not get much Kings of War stuff, you know, Dungeon Saga, all their other games. I mean, they may just have to go on the back burner right now.
See, and that, yeah, that was my other worry. It's like, you know, if they do this and they end up dedicating a bunch of staff and everything to The Walking Dead, they haven't even finished fleshing out all their lines for Kings of War, Dead Zone, none of that. You know, I mean, you're right. Like, how badly will the rest of us suffer? Now, keep in mind, like, they just announced it. For all we know, it's going to be another year before the Kickstarter goes up. And you know how Kickstarters are. The Kickstarter promise date probably won't be for a year and a half after that. So, I mean, we're probably looking at 2 years down the pipe.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they may be getting it turned around pretty quick. But, I mean, hopefully a lot of these people that they're hiring on are because of this as well. And they've already got it, you know, kind of sewn up and ready to go. Because I got to give them kudos for expanding. I mean, this has been a hell of a year for them, you know, I mean, as far as their company goes. And I wish them all the luck because they do have a great game and they are the best game, or I guess the best company that I have ever met that actually works with the community. Like, they are in it with the community and trying the best that they can to make this a great game. It's just that their customer service is not the best. And if that's already lacking, you may need to pull back just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're not the only company that does it. I mean, GW did it once upon a time. From what I know, Privateer Press is pretty open to their people. But yeah, I really do like Mantic, and I'd hate to see them fail or fall down on it. So it's exciting, and we're looking forward to see what it is. They've showed some pictures of zombies. I don't know whether the pictures that they posted are actually sculpts for the Walking Dead game or if that's just semantic zombies painted well and reposed. Could be. I'm not familiar with the Undead line as far as like up close and personal, you know, so I really have no idea. But I guess we'll just keep our ear to the ground for that. I've never been an enormous fan of zombie games for the first, so I don't know that I'll kickstart it, but we'll see, I guess. I really did like Necromunda and Mordheim, so I don't know.
Yeah, it depends on really on what it is. I mean, if it's one of those games where I can, you know, buy 20 models and, you know, have a playable set, maybe I'll do it, but it just need a little bit more information. I mean, I don't want to get into a whole nother game, you know, that's Kings of War size at this point. If I'm going to need 200 models to play it. But I'm looking forward to it because I do watch the show. I do like the show. I mean, I'm not all into it. You know, I don't live Walking Dead. I haven't actually read the comics or anything like that. But it's a good show. I do like the zombie genre. I watch a lot of that stuff. So I am looking forward to it.
Right on.
But, I mean, if we're talking kind of new stuff here, have you seen this crazy box stuff that they're doing?
Yeah, they do it every Christmas.
Do they really? I guess this is the first Christmas I've been with Mantic, but this is pretty cool if you play all their games.
Yeah, no, it's a great way to fill your bits box. What is it, like 60 pounds or something?
Yeah, it's $85, $84.99.
U.S.
And you're basically getting a box full of stuff from across all their ranges, and you're guaranteed at least 50% off retail price.
Right.
So if you play a lot of their games and you're really into it and you don't care what you get, or if you got a lot of friends that go into it with you, you can mix and match and get some good deals.
I mean, even if you don't play all their games, it's bits bonanza, man. I mean, it's a bunch of stuff you can use for conversions. I know sometimes they throw like some terrain in there. You just end up with a smattering of everything. So
I just thought that was interesting and thought I'd bring that up while we were talking about different things.
Now, do you know how long it's got left?
No, I don't. I mean, it's up for pre-order. It says currently available on pre-order and will begin shipping 11th of January, so today.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I mean, I've never bought one. I'm not against it. I mean, it's $85.
Me neither. I mean, it's, like I said, I mean, I still only play the Kings of War, so I don't want a bunch of Dreadball or Dungeon Saga stuff. Not yet, at least. But, you know, If they do this every year, I may look into it next year.
Well, if you feel crazy, I'll throw in halvesies on it with you.
All right. Well, we'll see. Maybe we'll have a box unopening special Hobby Heroes edition.
Something crazy, yeah. Let's see what else we got. I mean, that's... not related to the show, but, you know, just hobby. I played my first game of Blood Bowl. There's a group in our area that started a league. Ten guys. And I don't know a single damn one of them, which is a big deal because, I mean, Springfield's not really a big town, so most gamers have at least met each other before. And most of these guys, from what I gather, used to be GW players, and they've kind of left it over the years. And some of them play historical, some of them just play board games, but, you know, they've had some figs languishing in the closet forever, so they started a Blood Bowl League, and I found it on the Meetup site, and so we started that, and I got to play my dwarves, and the first game I played was against a real super nice guy named Brad, and he had a human team who I just utterly punished. Like, I had to pull the foot off the gas pretty hard to not crush him. There was some charity in there, like, no, don't worry, he's not dead. We'll just ignore that roll. No, you go ahead and do this. We'll just ignore that roll. So the score ended up 2-1. If I'd been a prick, I probably could have made it, like, 4-0. But I figure these guys have a working knowledge of miniatures games. Most of these dudes do. They play Blood Bowl, which means they own teams, means they've been involved with GW at some point in the past, and it is a possibility... that I could maybe talk some of them into playing Kings of War. And so I went on, I really threw the sales pitch at this dude, and like, he was looking it up on his phone between turns. So he seemed pretty interested, and I think it's a great way of maybe branching some extra dudes into playing with us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. We need more people in this area.
Yeah, it's sad some days.
But, I mean, hey, I mean, you got to start somewhere. I mean, we knew it wasn't going to be easy. I mean, we didn't really have the best fantasy crowd, at least in our area. I mean, in the extended area, we got a good or had a good crew. But just in kind of the Springfield area, it was really only 3 or 4 of us.
Yeah, it's always been kind of sad.
Yeah, but if we're sticking on the GW train, we did play the new Warhammer Quest game. That was pretty interesting.
I forgot all about that. Yeah, for anybody who's a big fan of Warhammer Quest and its Once Upon a Time awesomeness, GW put the rights to Fantasy Flight Games to make a Warhammer Quest, the adventure card game.
It was a good game. It was tough, but I enjoyed playing it. It had a very good quest feel to it.
Yeah, no, it did. I've played a number of times since I got it as an anniversary present, and that was in early December. And every time, it's just stomped my face in. I played it with a couple of guys who I consider some of the most, like, meticulous, like, mathy odds-playing people that I know. And we all lost. We died at, like, the last room, like, halfway through it. And the way the books works, it says, you know, if you lose a quest, you should just go on to the next one anyway. You just don't get the good stuff from it. But I refuse to accept that because... Damn it. I want to see my guys level up. But the first time me, you, and Dave played, we played a 3-player game. It's technically 1-4 players. Like, you can play it solo if you want. There's rules in there for doing it that way. And, I mean, we eked out the dungeon. And by eked out, I mean, it's a very cooperative game. Like, if you don't work together, you're going to lose. That's no question. But at the end of it, we were looking at each other's health going, all right, well, what if this and this and this? No, that's not going to work. Well, what about this and this and this? No, that's going to work. And what we finally came down to was you and Dave had to sacrifice yourselves and die. Because only one of us has to make it out of the dungeon alive. And I ended up finishing the quest with literally 1 hit point left. But that's all we needed.
That is a victory.
Absolutely. And apparently I drag your carcasses out of the dungeon with me and take you to town and get you revived at a temple or some nonsense. And then that night we went on to do the second quest. It's a 5 quest chain, so we'll continue playing that and talk about that in the future. The second quest, after we leveled up, was a lot easier.
Yeah, leveling up was a big deal.
And, you know, I don't know that it was the leveling up that really did it, or if it was just that the second quest is easier. Like, the first quest seemed really, really difficult. It is not polite to you. It has this kind of tracking mechanism in it, where if you're taking too long, it starts to punish you. And if you get to the end of that tracker, it punishes you hard. Whereas the second quest, not only was the tracker not as violent, there was a card which, as long as you, whenever it came up, as long as you chose to do a certain thing, you could put the card back in and it would put the tracker back two turns. So we just kept doing that, drawing the timer back, giving ourselves more time to finish, which I think was a big deal. But you're also right, leveling up. In this game, you roll dice for your actions, and as your basic, you all start out at 2, and then when you advance, you get up to 3, and you wouldn't think 3 is that big of a deal, but damned if it isn't.
Yeah, I think leveling up was a big deal to it. I do think the second quest was a little bit easier, but because, I mean, we breezed through that second quest, but leveling up was a big deal.
Yeah. A lot of the actions, other than getting extra dice, also come with little extra things, like suddenly Dave was healing everybody, and I was throwing, like, serious amounts of damage around. You know, I mean, I had to take wounds to do it, because I guess that's the Fire Wizard's thing. Like, he takes wounds to increase his damage, but I'll be damned if he isn't good at it.
Right.
So, it was pretty cool. We were happy with it. So, here's something I mentioned, I think, at the end of the last episode. I was talking about coming up with a map campaign for us to do. And so, I thought I'd just kind of throw those ideas out and see if anybody wants to respond with email. You know, maybe if you've played a map campaign or if you've made up some rules for it, send them to me and I can take a look at them and see if we're interested in using them as well, or see if I have any ideas. My first thought is just a very simple map. Like, there's only 3 of us. I'd like to include Chuck and Dan, but they live so far away now that it's kind of unrealistic too. Maybe if I can get one of these Blood Bowl dudes jumping on. And so just take 3 of us. We each start with like a set number of tiles. Like, I don't know, we each start with like 7 tiles or something. So the map isn't enormous. And then put places on the map, like, you know, we each have a castle, and then we each have like a town and a mine. And I don't want them to be like super overcomplicated bonuses. That I was thinking of maybe just using them to like figure out what the size of the game would be. Like, put your little army on the board and it moves around, and if you fight, it's like a 1,000-point game. And if you're fighting on a town or a mine, it's like a 1,500-point game. And if you hit the castle, it's like 2,000 or 2,500 points. Just real simple.
Yeah, with 3 people, I mean, I think we're going to have to keep it simple.
Yeah, I mean, you can't start getting crazy complicated. And then, you know, as an end point, just say, look, the second one of us manages to take over one of the other players' capitals, the campaign's over, you know. Or set a date for, like, hey, at the end of May, we'll be done. And just whoever has the most tiles at that point wins. Or if you at some point take over a second capital city, you win. And then the other thought I had was a podcast campaign, which I didn't know how this would go. But I was thinking, again, a hex map divided up kind of the same way that I was thinking for us, is like a simple thing. Except instead of 3 players, it's 3 factions. So it would be divided up in 3 sections. There'd be the evil, the neutral, and the good. And then people who listen to the show could play the games, and what they could do is they could basically just send in results every month. You know, hey, we played a game, elves versus ogres, elves won. Or hey, we played a game, orcs versus forces of nature, and the forces of nature won. And I would just keep track of these for a month, and at the end of every month, I would tally it all up, and then kind of move ownership on the map around. So, you know, if the neutrals were beating the good guys and the bad guys, but the bad guys lost to the good guys, you know, I could just move flags around to show that the neutral is expanding their territory while the bad is shrinking, or the good is shrinking and the bad is expanding, but only into the good. And just kind of do that for a couple months and see if people are entertained by that. People could write stories for it if they wanted and send in, like, battle reports, and we could post those on the blogs and through the Twitter. It was just an idea of maybe trying to get... you know, kind of get people involved with the podcast, really, and, you know, maybe encourage them to get their friends who are playing to listen as well and participate. Just kind of something as a community-building exercise.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. I just need to see if we got some interest, you know. Hit us up on Twitter, email, whatever, you know. If you're interested in this, let us know. And if we get enough, we'll definitely throw something out there together and try to get it going.
Yeah, so hit us up on Twitter. Leave us messages. Reply on the blog. Email us, joe or ryan@thehobbyheroes.com. Let us know if that's something you guys would be interested in doing. I know other companies have done it in the past rather successfully as far as, you know, just setting it up so that people could send in their results. I'm not a web aficionado. Like, I'm not going to build some crazy website for you to log into. It's just going to be as simple as, hey, you email me these and I'll update the map like once a month. So I thought I'd throw that out there. I thought maybe people would find it interesting. And, you know, I mean, I've got that Mighty Empires set. And it's mostly finished painted. Like, it looks nice. It seems a pity to have just been sitting in a box for, Jesus, I don't know, like 2 years now.
Yeah, it's been a while at this point since we used it.
Right. And I would like to get some more use out of it. Well, half an hour roughly into it, and we've gotten through the first chunk of the notes. So let's go ahead and take a short break.
Give love.
And we're back. And over the break, we had a little talk and realized that we'd forgotten to discuss a rather large piece of news. And I know some people are going, oh, they're finally going to talk about Destiny of Kings. And we're not going to. We are going to, but we're not going to yet. We're going to talk about, today is January 11th, 2016. And the world has lost David Bowie.
It's a sad day.
It is. The man has joined his space in his own oddity. That man was a hell of a performer, and
he truly was ahead of his time.
I mean, a solid 40 years of work, because he just put out an album late last year, didn't he?
Yeah, well, I thought he had a new one coming out here within the next couple months or something like that. Yeah, I think he's got a new one coming.
Yeah, I knew he either just did one or he's doing one. I thought it had already come out, but just the fact that the man is still or was still making music all the way up to the end. And apparently the guy's had cancer for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And didn't tell anybody, I guess, and no one knew. But he had been doing like the press junket and going out and doing interviews and everything for the thing and just powering through it all the way to the end. But yeah, sad day. That man made a lot of great music.
Yeah, I mean, and just his range was incredible. I mean, was it White Christmas with Bing Crosby? I mean, like, he was just all over the place. He could really do anything.
Yeah, no doubt. Not to mention all the great movies he was in. Labyrinth.
Yeah.
The Goblin King. Yeah, it's too bad. But, I mean, I guess all great music people pass away, so let's go ahead and get to that whole Destiny of Kings thing. Now, Destiny of Kings has not been released to the general public yet, I don't believe, correct? It is
not that I'm aware of.
It has, however, been sent out to the Kickstarter backers, which you and Dave are backers. So we've naturally read through the damn thing. Well, I've read through it. I don't know that either of you have finished it.
I've read the important bits.
The important bits. So I guess I can't speak for Dave. It's 57 pages, not a super huge book, but a digestible size. I mean, it's not anything, you know, not quite as long as the rule books, but whatever. Full color, of course. It's going to be hardback when it comes out to the public. What we're working off is just the PDF that Ryan and Dave have as Kickstarter backers.
Yeah, shows here, it looks like it's going to be released in February.
So, yay, exciting for that. But at 57 pages, I can't imagine it's going to cost that much. I don't know what the... Do they have a price point on the website?
Yeah, $25, same as Uncharted Empires.
I mean, come on. You can't beat $25, damn it. No,
really, it's not. I mean, $25 for a gaming book, I mean, that's pretty average, really.
Yeah. I love Mantic's pricing system here. It's just like, hey, is it a rule book? $25. It's another $25. Hey, here's more $25. Like, you know, for God's sakes, in any comparable game, you'd be paying $150 for these three books, if not more. So at $25 pop, happily to pay. Like, I'll happily pick this bad boy up when it comes out. So going through it, it contains information. It's, you know, to anybody who remembers the old Games Workshop General's Compendium, it's kind of like that, minus the hobby articles. It has...
Very similar to that one.
Yeah, very similar. It's got a good section up front on how to run very simple, like, map-based tree and narrative campaigns, which is nice. Then you get to the middle, kind of the middle throughout the end, and it is a set of seven scenarios. It's an actual, like, storylined campaign. You play one scenario after the other, and each scenario, you know, continually affecting the next one, which is really neat. And it is a number of different races. So there's like the primarily it's the undead and the demons versus the rest of the world. So at some point you're dragging in. It starts out, I think, against Basilians, and then you drag in some elves, and there's some dwarf in there at some point. So I can't remember if it gets the Kingdom's Men or if it just ends up with Basilia again somewhere further down the line. But it's pretty neat. There's an idea in there that I never saw before, and that is one of those seven scenarios is actually predicated on a game of Dungeon Saga being played in the middle of it. So, like, the general of the undead at some point gets in. He's like, oh, we're going to go find this artifact. And so then it's like, hey, go play this game of Dungeon Saga. And it lays out like the map for you and all the stuff in there. So I thought that that was a really neat idea. And that's pretty cool. And then there's a list of the Dungeon Saga characters, as well as like the characters who are specific to this campaign. And it actually has their points cost and statistics to be used in Kings of War itself. So anybody that did buy Dungeon Saga and has all these cool models from it now has the ability to use them in their games.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid idea. I like the kind of crossing over. And it's just one of those that if you don't have that game, you just kind of skip it and go on to the next one.
Right. I mean, you could just roll a four, you know, dice off for it and say whether, you know, the bad guy won that scenario or not. I did give it a hard look, and I don't think that it's realistic for us to be able to duplicate it with a game of Warhammer Quest. I mean, I do have the old Warhammer Quest set, but it's, I mean, well, for one, I don't have Dungeon Saga, so we have no idea what the rule, I mean, it's got all these stats and numbers and things in the scenario that I don't have a clue what any of it does. I mean, nothing's stopping us from just playing a game of Warhammer Quest and calling that a stand-in for it. But I don't think it's going to come out the same as, you know, as Dungeon Saga was designed to do. And then, finally, as you get to the end of the book, there are 6 new scenarios to be played. And these aren't balanced scenarios. They're not tournament scenarios. They're designed to be played with narrative spins, which means we're going to end up playing them all at some point. And probably discussing them on the show.
These are some good ones for, you know, basement gaming, just because the deployment's kind of weird and there's different rules. Sometimes you're outnumbered. So these are going to be a lot of fun just to see how they go, because they're, you know, outside of the mold.
Agreed. I know there's a couple of them, I think, that use a rule where when a unit dies, the bad guy can bring it back in off the end of the table. And it's just like wave after wave. So yeah, the scenarios look like a lot of fun. They look like they're well written. And I'm pretty excited to try those out and start talking about them. But we haven't had that kind of time at the moment. You know, Christmas is Christmas. Everybody gets, you know, bogged down at Christmas. We all did. But we will get to playing them and discussing them. And we're pretty excited to do that. Finally, on to our main topic for the night. Which, for any of you who tuned into this for Kings of War, hope you enjoyed the first half of the show.
Yeah, sorry about your luck.
Because it's about to bend over to Wild West Exodus. And our main topic was the dry run for the Adepticon $550 Gunslinger Scrap. So that is taking place at Adepticon on the Friday night. And it's, shoot, I think it runs from like 9 to 5 or something. It's like 4 or 5 rounds.
Yeah, I want to say it's 4 rounds, $550 or points, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
And they did change the rules for the build, so it is just base 550. They're, I mean, you're still restricted by just your boss's underboss sidekicks, but there you don't have a reinforcement or a main ledger. It's just one army.
Yeah, the way the Gunslinger packs were originally designed was you had $350 for like your main list. And then you had two $200 sideboards that you could switch in and out between games. And then the problem with that is the way that the game works on its point system, it's dollars. You end up a lot of times with, you know, 10 or 15 or maybe even $20 unused in each of your lists, which if you end up with $20 unused, shit, that's $60. That's another model you could have on the table. And I know, Ryan, you expressed some dissatisfaction with that.
Yeah, it was just frustrating because, I mean, at least for my guys, I don't really have anything. I'm very limited in the stuff they have that costs less than $100 points-wise. And so it was just hard to kind of get what I wanted. I felt that it wasn't real new player friendly, which a lot of times when you do these low points, that's kind of what you want, is you want to get the new people in. But by taking out the hired hands and the light attacks, kind of those lower point cost things, you're only stuck with the bigger stuff. And so, like, I had a hard time making lists under the original the rules. I mean, I could do it, but it wasn't what I wanted to take. You know, it was what I could take, and that's just, you know, takes away from why you play the game.
Right. So, you know, I know Dave also expressed that he was having troubles. I was running like $5 or $10 short on each one, which I didn't think was that big of a deal. But my assumption is enough people complained about it that they did release an email. I think this was probably a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago.
It was last Wednesday. It was right before we played, yeah.
So, yeah, they're like, hey, we get it. This is hard, so we're just going to cut it. It's a $550 list. Same restrictions, just $550 instead of three different like pieces of an army.
You don't got to break it down.
So it did give people the ability to slide in an extra model here and there. And let's go ahead and go through our list. You can go first if you'd like.
Yeah, I went with the Earp brothers. I got Boss Wyatt, Underboss Virgil, and Sidekick Morgan. The baby Morgan, not the big Mecha Morg. And then just to cap it off, just one UR30 bot. So I came out to, I want to say around like 540. I'd have to add it up real quick, but pretty close. And that's kind of what I wanted. I kind of wanted to do a theme. And the whole reason I kind of got into this game is because I love the movie Tombstone. And so that's why I'm playing the Lawman, is for the Earps. And so I wanted to take those, and the previous one I really couldn't find a way to get all of them in there, and so now that they changed it, I'm able to get them, and it worked out well. They got some good symmetry with each other, like Wyatt helps protect them, Morgan helps out the UR30 bot, and then both Virgil and the UR30 bot got 9 lives, so they get back up on pretty decent rolls. So, and then overall, I got 6 influence for it. So if I just save a couple of those for the 9 lives rolls, hopefully it'll stick around for quite a while.
Yep. So I took Jesse James, Missy Capelli, Cole Younger, and Thomas Tate Tobin. So I took Jesse. He's just kind of a utility dude. He has a lot of small shots with a decent power, you know, power 10. So yeah, he's got a number of small shots with good power. And then he can combine his guns for one shot each turn, which is super high power. It's like POW 14 and thermite round, so it halves your armor. Also, you know, 3 or 4 influence, which is nice. I took Thomas Tate Tobin, who's a sidekick mercenary. Nothing real super impressive. He has a nice long-range gun. It's only like POW 8 or 9. Does stun, gets 2 shots out of it, but the nice thing is for 140, he comes with 3 more influence. So 7 influence, now you're talking. Then I throw in Cole Younger, Miss Capilla. I had a total of 9 influence in, you know, 4 miles, which is a lot of influence in a small game. And Cole, he has a couple of average pistols, like 24-inch, POW 8. Not super impressive. He's basically there just for his smoke grenades. And then I took Miss Capilla, who has a POW... I think it was a POW 12 rocket launcher. I took her for 2 reasons. 1, rocket launcher. It's a 5-inch blast template, high strength. If it hits you, you get knocked prone, so it puts you on the ground, makes you waste an extra point to get up. And then also, she comes with a free CCLE K9, which is the robotic dog, along with her ability. Not only is the dog free, which gives me a 5th model in the posse, but she gets to nominate one of your models to be a kill model. So anytime the dog goes towards him, he gets extra movement. He gets extra swings in combat. He gets better physically, like his dice rolls get better. So I thought maybe he could run out, you know. I don't know. Like I haven't yet to figure out whether there's really a symmetry in the Outlaws, and I don't think there is. You know, you got the Earps who... A number of them, or at least I know why, it's, you know, if he's within a certain range of another ERP and this happens, he gets X, or if this ERP is over here, he gets this. Like, the Outlaws really don't have that.
Even, like, Jesse and Frank don't have anything that benefits each other?
Nope, not at all.
Hopefully they get updated soon.
Yeah, well, I doubt it.
Which, speaking of which, just a real quick interjection... Wild West Exodus has pretty much gone all digital at this point. Mm. So all of the cards are now online. Well, they're not even really cards now, but all the stats are online, and so they will be updating them as they see fit to help keep the game more balanced, which is a good thing.
Yeah, which is nice. I mean, the card system idea was a good idea, but, you know, I mean, Outlaw sent out an email when they did this, and even they acknowledged, like, yeah, we get it, like, you know, power creep, it happens. And they're like, as an attempt to address that, you know, we don't feel that you guys should be having to constantly check with us and then buying new cards just because we got a little, you know, gun crazy. And they're like, so we're going to go digital. It's going to save us money. It's going to get you access to the new rules and the new cards faster, and you can just print them out at home. And, I mean, part of that, I'm kind of like, well, I don't want to have to print them out. I shouldn't really have to check back every month to make sure that they're not changed. But I get it, and, like, I'm supportive of it. I think it's cool that they're doing it and that they're saying, hey, you know, it's free. It doesn't cost you anything. Come out, get your rules.
Yeah, I'm just worried what these new Kickstarter factions are going to be like if they're already telling us that they need to update the old ones.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I mean, as long as none of us buy any of the new Kickstarter factions, it really doesn't matter. I mean, we're going to go to Adepticon probably and get our, you know, faces pushed in anyway.
Yeah. One can hope.
Yeah. Well, I don't have, I have no belief that we're going to do well at this tournament. So
yeah, I mean, this Adepticon is one of the past few in a while where I'm just like, what happens, happens. I mean, I'm playing two games that I probably won't be in any tournaments in before Adepticon. Those will both be my first tournaments. So I don't really know what to expect, you know, outside of our little meta. And so that's part of the reason that I'm doing these, especially for Wild West Exodus, is I've never even played anyone else outside of our group, let alone a tournament. You know, I want to see what other people are doing.
Yeah, I agree. And strangely, you know, it's probably the Adepticon I've looked the most forward to in a while. And I think it's because of that same reason. Like, we're going up to play new games. This isn't Warhammer. It's not Blood Bowl. It's not, you know, things that we've been playing for years and years and years. It's Kings of War. That's a different game. It's Wild West Exodus. These are games that we've not played in a tournament setting before, and I think it's just kind of exciting to get into there, you know, to be able to go into it with fresh eyes into something entirely new to us and be like, oh, you know.
Yeah, I did not see that coming.
Right.
You know? It's like now last year you're walking up like, oh, man, Elven Host again? Like, seriously? But now you're looking up like, hey, what's that do? Oh, that just killed everything I have. Well, good to know.
I have a feeling that's what's going to happen a lot.
Yeah.
So we got there, and we rolled up our scenario. And the scenario for this game was the supply run. So we're just going to go over the scenario. It's the usual 6-foot by 4-foot board. Each player has a 10-inch deployment zone on the long board edge. So before we deploy, or before we roll, we each have to nominate 3 of our models to hold money bags, essentially. It's called supply bag. It's a money bag, let's just face it. and in a game at 550 where you don't have but 4 or 5 models, really limits that choice. So for me, Jesse and Thomas Tate Tobin, and I think I gave Missy Capelli, those 3 had my supply bags. You remember who had yours?
Yeah, mine were just the 3 ERPs. I chose the UR30 bot not to carry anything.
So everything deployed as normal, but the goal was to essentially own these supply bags. And what's interesting is you don't start earning points until the end of turn 2. So you have all of turn 1 to kind of get in place and move around and try and kill things. And then after turn 2, that's when you have to start looking at getting your score. And so you got a point for each of your guys carrying a bag in your opponent's half of the table. Didn't have to get in their deployment, just had to get in the other half of the table. And then if your guy died, he dropped the money bag on the ground where it became an objective. Now, if you got a guy over there who wasn't already holding the bag, he could pick it up and run around with it. Or if you had a guy over there who was holding a bag, he could control it by being within 3 inches of it, which nets you more points. So you got your primary points for that, And the way the gunslinger setup is there's a primary, secondary, tertiary bonus or point system. So that was your primary. And you can get 7 points in primary doing just that with the supply bags. And the second scenario, secondary, you can earn 7 points throughout the whole game on this. And there's a bunch of different like achievements. It's like achievements in a game. So you had your safe supplies. If no friendly model carrying a bag is killed, get 2 points. If double trouble, if you control an objective with a model who is also carrying a bag, you get 2 points. I'll take that. Kill a model carrying a bag, you get a point. In close combat, mind you. This land was your land. End the game with all of your models in your opponent's half of the table. And then drop it now. Kill a model with a bag the turn that it picks it up. So that one's kind of a hard one to get. Not only do you have to have one of your guys die and drop a bag. Well, I guess it doesn't have to be your guy. It could be one of the other guy's guys. You have to kill a model who drops a bag, and then someone else has to pick it up, and then you have to kill it on the same turn. And then finally, the last one is Annihilation. Now, that's just their basic victory point scale. And the way that works is it's some mathematical calculation, like the point value of the game divided by XYZ gets you a point, and for every dollar amount or point value you get in victory points, you get one of these points. You can get up to 7 points there. So you could get a total of 21 points for each scenario, and that's how this tournament at Adepticon is going to run, to my knowledge.
Now, something that I like in this is at least those first scenario points are cumulative. You don't just get them at the end of the game. You can start earning them at the start of turn two or end of turn two. And so like it used to be, like with Warhammer, people would just kill, and then turns 5 and 6 go off and get the objectives or get your models in the right position and then take them. Well, this one, I can go out and get them early, you know, get my 7, and then I can, you know, go on the defensive, or, you know, even if you do start to completely annihilate me, you know, I can still get those 7 without having to worry about not having any models left.
Agreed. Yeah, it is kind of nice. Like, some of those achievement ones are obviously, you know, at the end of the game. Like, this land was your land was end your game with all your models and your opponents at the tail.
Right, but all the first scenario ones were cumulative.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, up to 7 points. So you could earn all 7 points in a round or two, at which point you stop earning points for that. And then you're just like, all right, go kill things.
Yeah, but, or you can earn them over the course of the game. You don't have to do it all at once, or you can. It's nice to have that option.
Agreed. And especially since I don't think it's probably, well, I mean, it's not. It is completely impossible to earn 7 points from the primary scenario in one turn. Like, even if you killed all three of your opponent's bag handlers and you had all three of your dudes in their half and controlled all three of their, that's still only 6 points. So it's going to take at least 2 turns to get your 7 max. It is really kind of a neat idea. You know, it has you doing a lot of forward thinking in that whole process. So Ryan rolled the initiative, which means he got to not only deploy first, but to go first. So we set up a Wild West town, basically, like 6 buildings on each side of the table, a big street in the middle, but we put a lot of cover out in that street, crates, barrels, a fence, which, you know, what the hell's a fence doing in the middle of the street, but we definitely needed more cover, so we're like, yeah, it goes out there too. And you remember how you set up, Chief?
Yeah, just kind of, I kind of did it in a line. It was left to right. It was the UR-30 bot, and then Morgan, Wyatt, and then Virgil. Because Wyatt has a special ability, is if either Morgan or Virgil basically gets shot within 6 inches of Wyatt, he then gets to make a shot at the person that shot the one of his brothers. And so I tried to keep him within 6 on each side. I never remembered that rule and didn't ever actually use it, but I did remember it for setup. And so that was just trying to keep everybody close, but I've played too many times against you to know not to keep them too close, because you always got some sort of blast weapons.
Yeah. You did leave the UR-30 bot kind of out on the edge, but yeah, you kept the herbs next to each other. So setting up for me, I had Missy Capelli and her dog out on my far left across from Virgil. We called Virgil the kill target for the dog. Then I had Cole Younger and Jesse James kind of together, not too far off to the right of her. And then Thomas Tate Tobin was hanging way out under the water tower because he has a 36-inch range gun. So I was like, screw it. He's going to go way over here. In retrospect, I should have put Missy out there with him, but I didn't. So you, of course, like I said, had the initiative and went first. And you walked up and started blasting things.
Yeah. You left, like you said, you left Missy kind of out in the open. And so I just moved up and put some damage on her because I knew she was going to be the problem just because of her range. As I knew that if you got out of my range, then I was going to have to go out in the open and have to deal with that. So put some on her, and I think that was kind of it for my first turn. Just kind of maneuvered, put a couple shots on her.
Got into cover.
Right, and then, yeah, I just kind of took cover at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I had her behind cover, but... I didn't think you would get that good of a shot on me on turn one, and I was wrong. So my turn one, Tobin shoots and stuns the UR-30 bot, taking an action point off, negligible damage. Cole and Jesse came out, shot. Jesse started hiding in smoke, because that's pretty much what him and Cole Younger were supposed to do. Missy blasted Wyatt with the rocket launcher, put him on the ground. And then the dog ran up to that fence that had no business being in the middle of the street and hid behind it. I probably could have made it. I mean, we looked, you know, here's the hard thing is Wild West Texas is not pre-measurement game. So, we looked at him like, man, the dog could probably get to you, but I don't know that he could actually get in range to attack. And I didn't want to just put him out there like right next to you where he has absolutely no cover. Like if I fell short, you were just gonna be able to shoot him without any modifiers at all. So I hit him behind the fence. Was not enough.
Yeah, the fence was within Wyatt's shotgun range, and so he just opened up on the dog and killed him after a couple shotgun blasts, because that dog only has what, 5 or 6 health on him?
5, yeah. I didn't even realize that. And here's part of the problem with us going to a tournament. Like, we just don't know what the hell anything does. Like, I didn't even remember, and I probably knew at some point, but that he had a shotgun. Like, I was like, I'll be safe behind this fence. And he's like, shotgun, bam, bam. I'm like, oh. Well, that sucked.
Yeah, I mean, I barely even know what my own stuff does, let alone other people. So it's going to be interesting.
I can't remember if it was turn 2 or turn 3. The UR-30 bot sauntered up, and I think it was actually turn 3, where Cole had smoke down for him and Jesse again, but where he was standing, there was a crack between the smoke, basically, and a building, where the UR-30 got a cheeky shot off and killed him because...
Yeah, I got lucky. That was the one turn that your smoke didn't hit, and so it deviated just enough to give me that shot through there.
Yeah. And then one shot, and it wasn't very polite of you either. Let's see. I took Thomas. This is turn 2. Tobin started moving like around the back of some buildings, trying to get over to Ryan's board at half. Ryan didn't really have a whole lot of need to move the ERPs up.
I did move, once I killed Capelli, Missy.
Yeah, Virgil came up. Yeah.
He came around. And
like, he booked it across the street to start getting behind my back.
Yeah.
You got, once Cole went down, you got some good shots in on Jesse. Took him down to like 5 or 6 health. And Virgil got across the street. And I was like, all right, I'm already down at this point. 3 guys to, you know, your 0. So I was like, Jesse's going to come around this corner and just pump as much lead into Virgil as he can. Came around the corner, 4 shots, 4 hits, and I think you took like 2 damage.
Yeah, it was 2 or 3. I think I rolled like a couple of 10s and making like a 9 or a 7 or something to take damage.
Yeah.
I mean, like, up until this point, my dice were good, but they weren't great. And then as soon as that happened, I think you were done. You're about ready to flip the table. And so at that point, we kind of called it.
Yeah. Your dice were a lot better than mine.
You need to get rid of them Trinity dice, man. Need some new ones.
I guess. But, you know, I don't know that it's... I don't know that it's better dice versus number of dice. Because we discussed it afterwards, and I think this is really where I'm falling down in Wild West Exodus, is all of the outlaws only have 2 action points, which means we can move and then shoot. Whereas, you know, between you and Dave, you guys all have like 3, 4 or more. Yeah, I mean, so like you're able to...
White has 4, Virgil has 3, even the UR30 bot has 3. I mean, Morgan only has 2, but...
So you guys are able to move out, shoot, and then move back into cover if they want. Or they can book it across the street and get into cover again. Whereas my guys can't make it across the street in one turn because we don't have the movement and the action points. Combined with, it seems like most of your guns had a much higher rate of fire than any of mine did. You know, rolling, what's the UR30 bot got, what, like 4 shots out of his 1 action point?
Yeah, he gets 4 because it's rate of fire 2, and I got 2 of them with the UR30 blasters.
You know, Morgan gets 6. Wyatt, I think, got what, like 4?
Wyatt just gets 2.
Is it just 2?
Yeah.
But like all of my dudes had, you know, Missy had 1 shot. Cole has 2 shots. Thomas Tate Tobin has 2 shots. The dog didn't have any. Jesse's the only one putting out a good amount of multiple shots with 4 per action point. But, I mean, just hot damn, I could not do a thing. And then you down my guys. I don't know.
Yeah, we need to do a call out. If anyone out there plays Outlaws, help Joe out. He's kind of lost right now with these Outlaws and where to go to make them effective.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. Like, again, I don't think your dice were phenomenal. I think you just rolled more of them. And so it was weight of numbers took me out quicker. I mean, I'm sure there's some, like, I probably should have put Missy way out there with Tobin and...
Yeah, stay out of my 24.
Yeah, just didn't. And because of that, she went down early. And then Cole got killed just because of a, you know, a gap that appeared from a deviated smoke grenade. I don't know. I did roll a number of ones, or shit rolls, you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, and that's the thing with the amount of dice, you're just waiting for that one big shot, you know, where I roll a 9 and you roll a 1. You know, it's just, you know, that's what you're looking for. Instead of 1 and 2 here or there, you get that nice shot where you do 7 or 8 damage, and that, you know, changes big time what you start doing with that character.
Yeah, it's disappointing. Because I'm running into the same issue with Dave. I don't have enough shots to stop him as his werewolf guys, you know, the werewolves, the werebears, whatever. I mean, those dudes all have like 6 action points. And so they're across the board in a turn. And again, with 2 AP each, like, I just tend not to have enough shots to knock that guy down before he gets there. So he gets there and then he just tears people open. I don't.
Yeah, what I found with Dave is that he's always going to send something across the board. And so you just got to kind of wait and see what it is and then just concentrate fire on that thing. No matter if you're taking damage from other stuff, you just really got to concentrate on one thing at a time with the Warrior Nation.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't know. Not real confident about how the Outlaws are ever going to perform. I don't know if there's, you know, certain models in the Outlaw list that are just significantly better than others. I mean, I've looked at all the stats. You know, they put the stats on the website. And I guess now that they actually have the cards up for digital download, I could go look at those for all the other models and see what exactly differs between each one. Because the stats they used to put on the website were like, you know, half accurate is what I'd say. They were quite often wrong. Prices were wrong. Numbers were wrong. Because it was just supposed to kind of give you an idea of what the model did. But now that the digital cards are up for download, I should probably go check and see exactly what they all do. Because I feel like the, you know, maybe it's just the few models that I have that just aren't amazing. But I really don't know. And it just feels like an uphill slog every time I pull them out because you guys just walk over them so easily. Maybe it is my dice. I don't know. Maybe I should just use different dice.
Yeah, you know, it's worth a shot.
It's worth a shot. We can give that a try first, maybe. So, yeah, sadly, yet another blowout game.
Yeah, we're not doing so hot with giving people some good content here when it comes to games.
Yeah. Well, it's... It seems like most of the games we play that aren't like the topic of the shows turn out just fine.
Yeah.
And then the ones that we do for the topic of the shows are just terrible, man. I don't know what to do. Yeah, like if anybody plays Wild West Exodus and has some suggestions, by all means, throw it at me because I'm struggling. I'm struggling hard. And I got to tell you, if every practice game I play previous to Adepticon goes like this, that's a tournament I may just skip because it was only a $10 entry fee. And I'm sure they could probably find someone who knows what the hell they're doing that would enjoy that tournament a lot more than me, because I'm not much on the idea of just getting my face kicked like for 7 hours, you know? I would much rather go to the vendor hall and demo games for a while.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair. Like, that's like I said, that's why I'm not doing the 2-day Kings of War, because I just don't want to get my face kicked in for 2 days. So I can't blame you. But I'm looking forward to Wild West Exodus. I really like this game. And so I'm ready for it.
I like the game. I would just like it more if I didn't get tabled every time I played it.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. Like, I have no delusions that I'm going to win at Kings of War, but there's no way I'm going to lose 5 games in a row. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, I'm not, yeah. It has nothing to do with, like, oh, I'm so confident that I'm good, but surely I'm better than at least one person that I'm going to play. So
I hope so.
Like, I feel that first tournament experience with Kings of War, in a system that currently in the area seems to be, well, not necessarily in the area, but a lot of the complaints you're seeing are spam lists. Like, I fully expect to lose at least 2, probably 3 games. So if I come out of that with 2 wins, I'll be happy. And that's kind of the problem with Wild West Exodus, is I'm looking at it right now. Like, at this point, I'm not sure I could even manage 1 win. So unless I figure out what the hell I'm doing wrong and correct, then it's looking pretty glum.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It just is what it is at this point. I mean, from where we're sitting, is at least for these first tournaments, you just kind of got to see what's going to be thrown at you and go from there.
That is very true. It will be interesting to see. I just don't know. It's early to call. I don't feel right just being like, no, but we'll see. Because I still have to paint the models for it, too. I mean, that's something else. You know, before Adepticon, I've got to get whatever I decide to field painted. And I have a couple of them done already. Like, Jesse's long done. And I think Cole's done. The dog is done. So I really have to paint, like, Missy and Tobin. Assuming this is the list I go with, which I don't know. I'm probably not going to be.
Yeah, this is the one that I'm probably going to go with, because it's all painted. Like, I could field it right now. I need to go back and do some detail work, which I'm hoping to get done. But it's just one of those, going to be non-stress. If I get it done, I get it done. If not, then it's not a big deal. It's still tabletop ready.
Yeah, so that's that. And what do you do? Any ideas? What do you want to do? You want to do another Wild West Exodus? You want to go back to Kings of War?
Oh, I don't mind. You want to try one of these new Destiny of Kings scenarios and see how it goes?
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I do kind of want to play one of the new scenarios, like, because it's exciting. I'm like, oh, you know, Demantic is just releasing stuff so fast that I want to play it. I want to see what they do. And I know one of the new scenarios is going to be obviously, like, you know, not balanced, but I still want to try it.
Yeah, I mean, I just like any of those kind of weird setup ones, I like to do, you know, just kind of in a basement game, just to change it up. So let's do one of those. I mean, we'll look at them, maybe just roll one at random or to decide on one and right. See how it goes. Maybe if we get enough time, we can do two.
Sounds good to me. Sounds good to me. So that is the primary part of our show and the main topic and kind of the news and all that nonsense. So we're going to take just a second here and discuss the geekery at the larger world. Spoilers ahead, Star Wars The Force Awakens. What did you think?
I liked it. I thought it was a good movie. I don't think it is better than any of the original three, but it was well worth my $15, whatever it is, to go see in 3D. And I will. I'm definitely looking forward to the next one, Episode 8. What did you think?
Agreed on all the above. And I think maybe it's because it got overhyped. Like, I went into it expecting a good movie, and I got absolutely that. Like, I was not disappointed in my money spent. I was not disappointed in the time that I spent at the theater watching it. I thought it was a good movie. I was very happy. I enjoyed it. I left, and I talked about it with my wife on the way home. You know, we went over kind of what we liked and what we thought was really cool. But I did not think it was a, you know, the great movie. Like, so many people are just like, oh my God, it's the greatest movie ever. It's the best Star Wars I've ever seen. I'm like, no. Yeah, like, it was a good movie, but it wasn't, you know, the best damn thing out there. I think people are really wearing the rose-colored glasses going into that thing.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. I mean, like, there are some people that are seeing it 3 and 4 times, and it's, you know, if I had a friend that hadn't seen it, I'd go again and see it, but I'm not going just to go see it again. You know, it was good. I liked it. And I mean, there was some things that I didn't like about it, but you're going to have that with every movie.
Right. So what was, let's just go through it. What's your favorite part?
The favorite part? Oh man, that's tough. I don't know. You go first.
What a cop out. Favorite part. Really, truly, frankly, my favorite part is probably the very early end. Han Solo is on the ship after they've gotten the Millennium Falcon on board, and he's talking to like the two different gangs who are basically there to collect their debt from him. And he's like, "When have I ever let you down?" And the guy's like, "Last week." And then he looks at the other guy in the gang. He's like, "Have I ever let you down?" And he's like, "Twice." And Han Solo's like, "When was the second time?" And he's like, "Blah, blah, blah." And he's like, "Now, wait a minute." It's just like, it's funny because, you know, he's always having to talk his way out of that nonsense. And I just thought it was a really good piece of dialogue to throw on him.
Yeah. Okay. So my favorite part, which is going to lead into my probably least favorite part, was it kind of right at the beginning when Kylo Ren is basically raiding that town or whatever, and he stops that blaster bolt in like midair with the Force.
That was hot.
I'm like, oh man, this guy is a badass. He's gonna be awesome.
He is pimp.
This is gonna be a good movie, you know. And then it goes to probably my least favorite is later on in the movie, he takes off his helmet and he's just like, nerd alert, like, look at this guy. Like, way to go, Poindexter. It's like, oh man, they should have just left the helmet off. Like, this guy does not look like a badass at all.
Oh, no, he does not. I do have to agree. Like, that, they really should have done something with his hair or something, because you're right. They, like, you're in there and you're like, oh, the dude's so awesome. He's going to kick face and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, you're right. Once he pulled that helmet off, dude, you could not look at him the same way and be like, he's
nothing intimidating about him, like, facially.
No, not an intimidating figure at all without the face mask. And you look at it, and this is kind of what I got, like, it looks like the kid that everybody picked on in high school because he dressed in all black.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like that goth or emo kid that everyone always made fun of because he was quiet. And
yeah, And, you get kind of that long, kind of stringy black hair.
Right. Like, he's the geek even the geeks made fun of in high school.
And, yeah, that was just disappointment because I was like, all right, let's see this guy. Maybe he's all scarred up or something, you know, had an accident. No, he was just there, you know. Yeah. I mean, that's really all I could say was like, yeah, I could beat that guy, you know.
Yeah, they better find a way to make him look more threatening in the next movie, that's for sure.
Yeah, but just keep the helmet on. The helmet looks awesome. Like, that guy walking around in the beginning of the movie, I was like, you know, he's like using the force to rip thoughts out of people's heads. I mean, it's like, this guy is a badass. And then once he took the helmet off, I just couldn't get behind him again as a bad guy. I was like, ah, man, who's going to be afraid of this guy?
Ruined.
Yeah. But, I mean, he was still supposed to be a badass. Like, he had some cool powers.
Yeah, no, he did. My least favorite part was probably... I got to think for a second.
This would be when the stormtrooper beat him up. That was another terrible part.
No, I enjoyed the stormtrooper part. I thought that was fun.
But stormtrooper beat up Kylo Ren?
Stormtrooper beat up Kylo Ren?
At the very end when they're fighting and Finn's trying to protect Rey. And so he's using the lightsaber to fight Kylo Ren.
Oh, he didn't beat him up. He held him off for like 30 seconds.
That was much longer than 30 seconds. Much longer than that dude should have lasted. He's a stormtrooper, for Christ's sake.
He's probably a force-sensitive stormtrooper.
Yeah, okay.
You don't know.
Well, I'll email J.J. Abrams, and he's apparently explaining everything else in the Star Wars universe.
Seems like it at the moment. My least favorite part had to be the lack of use of Captain Phasma. Like, they introduced her, at early in. She's clearly the one in charge of everything. It's this kind of imposing storm. She's like the one stormtrooper that's completely different. Which, I take that back, because you had swirly baton stormtrooper too. But, like, she had chrome armor, and, you know, she was clearly in charge, and she was supposed to be the awesome boss. And then they gave her, like, what, 5 sentences of dialogue in the whole movie? Didn't use her in any fight scenes. You never saw her, like, take command of anything. The only thing you saw her was get punked out by Finn, being like, turn the shield off, turn the shield off. Like, come on.
I see, but I don't know who she is. I'm like, I don't read all that side stuff. So I was like, hey, there's a leader of the stormtroopers in Chrome. All right, I'm sure he or she can't shoot anything either, you know?
You know, and I'm sure that they did it deliberately, too, to be like, she's going to have something more in the next couple of movies. She's going to, she'll flesh out into her own, maybe.
There are 2 more movies coming, so I can still explain quite a bit.
Right, but it's just like, and I wish they would have done something with her. Because they might flesh her out, or they might Boba Fett her. Boba Fett, a character who in the original 3 movies appeared on screen for maybe, what, a half an hour combined. Combined, he may have had 10 sentences of dialogue. He got killed by Han Solo while he was blind by being eaten by a giant sandworm. Yeah. And yet the dude still became one of the most popular Star Wars characters ever.
Yeah, that dude's overrated, man. He went down like a punk.
Right.
Everyone thinks he's the best bounty hunter ever. What did he actually do? He just followed Han in his ship. He didn't actually catch him. He was already in Carbonite when he took him to Jabba. So I'm like, what did he actually do besides die?
Exactly. But I mean, that just goes to show that I guess maybe they won't do a damn thing with Captain Phasma, and she may still be a super popular character.
In the end, she's still a stormtrooper, though.
Yeah, but
how popular can stormtroopers be?
The stormtroopers in this one, though, they gave enough of them individuality to be like interesting. Yeah.
I mean, they're not all clones anymore. So right. I mean, they.
Well, they're not clones.
They're all brainwashed, I mean.
Well, that's true. But they've got, like, sleeker armor. You know, the one guy died at the beginning, like, rubbed his bloody hand on Finn's helmet, and you're like, oh, there's emotion there. And then Finn's like, no, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. And then the one dude's like, traitor, and pulls out that whippy baton and starts going at him. Like,
I agree. They made him better. They gave him more emotion.
Yeah.
But in the end, they're still just frontline infantry.
Well, I agree. And they still killed a buttload of them, but they are definitely more interesting than they were in any of the other three movies.
I agree. That's for sure.
Apparently, I actually missed what probably was the coolest graphical scene, which is where Starkiller Base blew up like five planets, because I had to go pee and my son needed a soda, and I was like, God damn it. I was like, well, I'm gonna go right now. And apparently, luckily, I ran like during a moment where there was almost no dialogue and they blew up planets, because like she had like the vision with Luke Skywalker's lightsaber, and then she ran away down the hallway when the alien lady came up to her. I was like, I'm gonna go now. And then when I came back, like all the stormtroopers were fighting and the castle was like blowed up or whatever. And I'm like, what did I miss? And Joey's, my oldest son's like, they blew up five plants. I'm like, that's it? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, what'd they say? And he's like, well, the one guy said, now they'll see the power or whatever. And boom, five plants. It's like, oh, cool. I really didn't miss much, except probably the cool scene, graphically speaking.
Yeah, it was cool. How many times can you blow up planets? I mean, it really, there are a lot of similarities between this movie and A New Hope. I mean, it is pretty same outline with just different details to it.
I have heard that a number of times. That is one of the reasons it's been panned kind of hard by some people. And I get it. And it is not hard to see the parallels. Like, there is a droid carrying important information. He is lost on a desert planet. There is a person who becomes a Force-sensitive Jedi who had no inkling of it from before that, who has no parents, who is an orphan. There is an evil dude who is out to rule the freaking galaxy. They built a giant moon base. Hey, how do you blow it up? You send in a single fighter to blow it up. Hey, how's, you know, I mean, there were a million parallels. Like, the movie was absolutely fan serviced.
Oh, like, yeah, absolutely.
They went into it and went, what do all the fans want? Oh, they want the original movies. Well, here's an original movie. It is, you know, it's the first movie you saw of Star Wars, redone with today's graphics and a slightly different storyline, but expanding, you know, and really didn't expand a whole lot on any of the characters other than Han Solo. and then they killed him. Which, I mean, I knew was coming, but...
Yeah, I was... Something needed to happen, and when that did happen, I was like, man, they need to, like... Because at this point, Kylo Ren is losing bad guy points. Like, he's starting to cry, he's losing control of his emotions, he doesn't look intimidating. I was like, man, they need to bring this guy back. You know, they need to make him do something. And so I was like, he needs to kill somebody, not just lightsaber a bunch of machines out of, you know, rage. But, and so they did. He did kill him, which was good. I mean, how many more movies is Harrison Ford have in him, really? I mean, he needed to do something.
True. Well, I mean, Harrison Ford asked to be killed at the end of Jedi, so.
Right. At the end of Empire.
Or, yeah, the middle movie. He's like, right. When you freeze me in carbon, I just kill him.
Yeah, and, just don't wake me up.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Once he started being like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, again, just not an intimidating dude.
Yeah. Well, and then, like, the thing that gets me is if George Lucas had done this movie, I think people would be tearing him apart.
Oh, yeah.
Be like, this is just a remake. It's a reboot. You got nothing original. But because it's J.J. Abrams, who's apparently awesome all of a sudden, the people love it and they can't get enough of it.
I think, and again, I think that's that rose-colored glasses thing. Like, people went into it going, I don't want to see anything that even resembles the freaking prequel movies.
Yeah, I think those were just such a disappointment that as long as it was good, it was going to be great.
Right. And that's what happened. Like, because that's the way I came out of the movie feeling, and you did. It was a good movie. But yeah. So many people were so bitter at the prequels and so tainted by them that they went into it and it was kind of like something they already loved. They loved episode 4, and so they were like, oh my god, it's amazing. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, yeah, I'm excited, I enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to episode 8, you know.
Yeah. No, but I want more Luke Skywalker. Come on, man.
That was kind of a disappointment, wasn't it? Like, the entire movie, you're waiting for that asshole. And then at the end, it's like, ready? 30 seconds, done. No words, not a single sentence.
It is a trilogy. You got to set it up for the next one.
I know. And that after seeing the movie, it explains, like, throughout this whole process, everyone's like, how come there haven't been any leaked photos of Luke Skywalker? How come we haven't heard anything about Luke Skywalker's character? Blah, blah, blah. That's why. Because they literally didn't do a goddamn thing with him. Like, they probably filmed...
damn movie.
Right. Like, they probably filmed his 30 seconds at the very, very end. Like, that's why you saw nothing.
Definitely like a half-day shooting, probably.
Exactly.
He didn't have any dialogue. None of them had any dialogue in that whole scene. It was just them staring at each other.
Yeah. I think Chewbacca went brr when she got off the ship, and maybe the droids beep boop bopped, and then she, you know, spent 2 minutes walking up a stone staircase, and then she spent like a minute standing behind Luke, and he turns around, pulls his hood off, and looks at her, and bam, you're done.
That was pretty awesome, though, when he turned around and it was Luke. That got me right in the nostalgia. Because Luke's the man. I mean, like, I play lawman for Wild West Texas. Like, I am lawful good, you know, that is me. And so Luke Skywalker is my favorite. And so just to see him again, yo, bearded, yo, old guy, looks like Obi-Wan at this point. That's what got me. I was like, yeah, I'm ready for episode 8 now. Let's do this.
You know who Luke reminds me of in episode 4 and 5? He reminds me a little of Kylo Ren. I can't do it.
Well, that's the point. And also of, you know, Anakin in 2 and 3, you know.
Oh, my
God. The whole point is, man, that's why neither one of those were ready to be trained. It's because they're too emotional. It's too late.
You know what would be wonderful? Would have been great in episode 7. Kylo Ren talking to Darth Vader's helmet, being like, I'm not good enough. And then, you know how the Jedi's ghosts can pop up? If he would have just popped up and been like, you're right, you're not good enough, go kill yourself.
Oogity boogity.
That would have been awesome. Yeah, I mean, a number of the things that people are banning is like, how come Rey just suddenly went like, oh yeah, I've got the Force, let me out of these shackles, drop your gun, do this, do that, and then, you know, was awesome from their ass. Like,
yeah, I'm like, I don't know how old she's supposed to be, but we'll say like 18 maybe. And like, in 18 years you've had no inkling of the Force, and now all of a sudden you can just mind control people. And I'm like, it is a bit of a stretch.
Agreed. I mean, on the same token though, you know, Luke used the Force essentially to guide the torpedoes and blow up the Death Star in the first movie, so why the hell not?
Yeah, but he had freaking Obi-Wan. He'd been talking to a Jedi and had that little robot thing shooting him with lasers on the Millennium Falcon.
That's fair, I suppose. I don't know. I mean, it's, yeah, there's definitely gape holes there.
There are some big plot holes. Like, when they take the Millennium Falcon into space and it's Han Solo that finds them, I was like, what's the chances of that? I'm like, this thing's been sitting for 30 years on this planet and you can't find it, and it immediately goes into space and you're the first person to find it within half an hour.
Yeah, like, I agree.
But I mean, you gotta just, this is where it's just, you can't, not everything's gonna make sense. You just gotta accept it for what it is.
Like, it is a movie.
Yeah, if you start nitpicking, no movie's gonna be good. You know, you just gotta, you gotta enjoy it. And that's what I did, especially when Luke came on. Luke's my boy, man. He's the leader.
You're my boy, Luke.
You're my boy, Luke.
Now if he just drops dead of a heart attack while mud wrestling with Rey. So yeah, Star Wars Episode 7. Good movie.
Go see it.
Go see it. It's worth the money. I mean, Jesus Christ, if you're listening to us spoil the shit out of me, I assume you've already seen it. If not, bummer.
Yeah, sorry. You should have stopped listening.
No kidding.
If you are any, you know, Star Wars fanboys or girls and you got hate mail because we've been kind of hacking on it, send those to Joe. He'll make sure and respond to each and every one of you.
Yeah, I bet. it was good. That's it. So,
yeah, I think that is it.
All right. Have a good one, sir. Thanks for everybody listening. Throw us some reviews on iTunes. Send us emails, especially about that whole map-based campaign idea, joe or ryan@thehobbyheroes.com. And leave us comments. You know, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, The Hobby Heroes, Twitter at Hobby Heroes Cast.
Shoot Joe some ideas for the Outlaws. He needs help.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. Anybody that plays Wild West Texas and has any clue how the hell to make Outlaws not suck balls. I lost my family friendly demeanor once we started talking about Star Wars. Bastards. So yeah, do all that, be good, and we'll be back next month. We'll have played something, I'm not sure what, probably Kings of War scenario out of the Destiny of Kings book, because I think that sounds a lot more entertaining, and I'll let you know how much worse I'm getting at Wild West Exodus.
So, take care, guys.
Have a good month. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Taking you nowhere. Angel, come for the baby. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. Opening doors and pulling some strings.
Angel, come love the baby.
In walk luck and you looked in time. Never look back, walk tall, act fine.
Come love the baby.
I'll sleep with you, baby, for a thousand years. Walk the school and touch you in these golden years.
Go.
Of a dream car 20 foot long. Don't cry, my sweet, don't break my heart. Doing all right, you've got to get smart. Wish upon, day upon day. I believe, oh Lord, I'll believe all the way.
Run for the shadows, run for the shadows, run for the shadows.